the dynamics of the virus have really changed. I think it's fair to say that it's become endemic in wild bird populations. Previously, what we would have typically seen in wild bird populations would be like more kind of episodic spikes in different kind of flavors of influenza virus. And then as the wild birds became immune, you know, that flavor of the day would decrease and it would be constantly kind of this mixing vessel of different flu viruses. What we're largely seeing now is relatively the same clade of viruses continuing to dominate what is the population of influenza viruses in wild birds. And to the point where we're not seeing kind of that risk decrease.
We want to thank the innovative companies and products whose support and trust make this podcast possible.
DietForge.ai. AI-powered feed formulation with non-linear ingredient modeling and real-time collaboration. Finally, modern software for modern nutritionists. The Poultry Science Association is dedicated to advancing poultry science worldwide. Learn more at poultryscience.org. Anatox, partnering with the world's food producers to develop and deliver innovative programs to efficiently produce safer food. Kemin invites you to optimize poultry health and nutrition. Dive in at kemin.com/poultry. Fortiva, creating ingredients for impact to support animal resilience and health. Learn more at FortivaImpact.com.
Welcome to another episode of the Poultry Nutrition Black Belt Podcast. I'm your host today, Kelly Wamsley, and I'm joined by Dr. Michelle Crom. Hi, Michelle. How are you?
Hi, Kelly. I'm great. Thanks for having me.
I'm so excited for you to be here today. And we're talking about a very interesting and kind of hot, you know, button topic of HiPath AI. But before we dive into things, give us a little bit of a background on your career and where you're at now.
Sure. So veterinarian by training. So thanks for hosting as nutritionist. You know, appreciate that.
I wasn't even going to address that.
The white elephant in the room. I have managed nutritionists, though, so I know the type. So I'll do my best.
We know you're type two.
Yeah, I'm sure. Exactly. So I'm a turkey veterinarian by training. I was in production for about 15 years. Worked at Genio Turkey Store, so a subsidiary of Hormel Foods, called Western Minnesota Home, for multiple years. Since we're talking about HiPath influenza, those years included the 2014-2015 HiPath outbreak, which we all thought would be like a one and done. And clearly, as teed up by our conversation today, that was not the case. So I left Hormel just over 4 years ago now, and I'm on my own consulting kind of in a few different spaces, antimicrobial stewardship, emergency disease planning and preparedness, and then pre-harvest food safety are kind of the primary areas in which I specialize in.
Yeah, thank you. And so, like you said, that was something, it was shortly after my time whenever I came to Mississippi State and kind of, getting my feet wet in my first job and trying to see, you know, hearing about everything that was going on in all the different areas with HiPath AI, you know, it was a frightening thing. It's kind of seems like maybe we don't hear as much about it, just depending on where you're at in the country or seasons. But it's still something that's very real and impacting a lot of people and a lot of poultry producers. Can you give us some of the rundown on where we're at right now with numbers?
Yeah, sure. So just as a reminder, this current outbreak has been ongoing since February of 2022. Since that time, we have depopulated over 200 million birds in this country because of infection directly with HiPath influenza or with concerns that, you know, shortly afterwards with contact with positive birds that a prem down the road might be at high risk. Of those 200 million, 98% of those birds are associated with commercial operations. So even though we look at the number of farms detected, it's about a 50-50 split between backyard flocks and commercial prems. The overwhelming majority of like the total headcount for the number of birds is commercial. And as you kind of alluded to, Kelly, you know, those numbers aren't, of course, equally distributed across the various commodities. So when we think about headcount, we typically would see the number of egg-laying chickens be the highest number of that 200 million. If we think number of premises, turkey producers are usually make up the highest number of prems when we only look at commercial birds. And, you know, I think as we can kind of look at now here in the last 6 months, we still have issues kind of in ways that we maybe would predict. We're still having issues in turkey flocks in the upper Midwest, my home state of Minnesota, for example. We had a really large outbreak in commercial table egg layers in Pennsylvania this spring with almost 7.5 million birds being depopulated out in Pennsylvania. Broiler belt has not been unaffected, right? We had some small cases in Arkansas and Georgia, and then up on the Delmarva Peninsula. And then for my duck friends, you know, the duck industry in Indiana continues to really be severely impacted. So again, not evenly distributed across the commodities, but really impactful when we think about the number of lives that have been lost due to being positive for high path influenza.
Fortiva is moving beyond feed additives to create foundational ingredients that work with your poultry operation to support resilience and health. With proven technologies like FortiShell and VitaSea Feedlock, Fortiva helps you address the toughest challenges in poultry production. From shell quality to feed biosecurity and more, together we can make animals more resilient in the face of future challenges. Learn how at FortivaImpact.com.
Well, so thinking about that in itself, and, you know, I guess you, whenever you referred to the current outbreak and starting in, you know, in 2022, what makes it so that we're kind of discussing it from that manner of starting in 2022 and it's still just ongoing 4 years later or whatever, you know, down the road?
You know, I think the dynamics of the virus have really changed. I think it's fair to say that it's become endemic in wild bird populations. You know, previously what we would have typically seen in wild bird populations would be like more kind of episodic spikes in different kind of flavors of influenza virus. And then as the wild birds became immune, you know, that flavor of the day would decrease and it would be constantly kind of this mixing vessel of different flu viruses. What we're largely seeing now is relatively the same clade of viruses continuing to dominate what is the population of influenza viruses in wild birds. And to the point where we're not seeing kind of that risk decrease by any means. We're actually probably arguably seeing it increase as we've seen it not just impact poultry, but we've seen spillover now into dairy cattle, a lot of other mammalian species as well.
And you don't hear that much about, or at least in, you know, I haven't heard as much discussion about some of that spillover into, you know, dairy populations and things like that, but that's still ongoing. It's just not as discussed, just have we gotten used to it or what's going on there?
Yeah. So dairy industry, and by all means, I'm not an expert, so I'll caveat that as a turkey vet, but they're still seeing outbreaks. So Idaho had 5 farms break, I think roughly a month ago. I think some of the noise has decreased. You know, dairy industry has its own version of surveillance that's being executed with support by USDA. Some of the ways in which cases are reported are a little bit different too. So if a farm had a case previously and they have a new detection, that new detection isn't necessarily reported. So there is some nuances on how livestock cases are being reported by USDA versus what's on the poultry side as well. So while I think the overall kind of outbreak, to your point, has dramatically slowed since the spring of 2024. It's still out there. It's still popcorning around.
Okay. So then I guess, you know, okay. So it's, you use the term earlier, endemic, and then, you know, we've already discussed about, you know, it going into, you know, it had been morphing a lot and then, you know, kind of more steady on, what it kind of looks like and being there present. So then that brings into the conversation of today and something that is, you know, definitely, you know, the hot button topic on vaccination for HiPath AI. So, you know, we've seen some other countries that have been doing it, but there's, you know, this barrier of trade. And so I guess what are some of the, what's the thought process going through that? Where do you think we need to be in the U.S.? Should we be joining other countries or what should we be thinking about?
Yeah, that's a great question. I do think we run the risk of trying to either catch up or redirect conversations that are already occurring in other countries. And I think that is a concern when we just look at this space and how USDA and veterinary services with the help of USAPEAK have really led conversations in this space for a long period of time. And I think that's impactful in a couple ways. One, when you are following, you know, considerations for the type of production systems we have here in the US, you know, aren't necessarily equivalent to a lot of other places across the globe. The financial considerations are also different, both from a producer standpoint as well as a consumer standpoint. So if we just even consider those two aspects, not leading the conversation, I think can get us to a space that might make it financially infeasible, even if we wanted to institute some type of targeted vaccine program. The surveillance program that might be set up in the EU and become the global standard might be just financially infeasible for a turkey producer in Minnesota to be able to execute. And so they might just decide, well, I'm just going to end up taking the risk. Or as like I've seen in my own neighborhood, turkey producers just walking away because the risk is too much. And either the bank is sick of it or they're sick of it, or maybe a combination of the two.
Well, and there's a lot of dynamics going on too, right? Just alongside with, you know, that, are, you know, you see, you know, different, I guess, you know, shifts and you know, just the cost of feed and just all the different things that are fuel and things that are going on all at the same time too. And so then everything stacked on each other, just, it becomes a lot. It's really heavy, right? So, I mean, we've made a lot of changes in biosecurity. I mean, is it, Do you think that we can get from that standpoint of just being able, you know, we just need to tighten up biosecurity that much more? We need to, or do you feel that the direction of where we need to be going is in that the vaccination realm?
Yeah, I always cringe when I'm in a room with producers and somebody comes in, well, all you guys need to do is, you know, get just a little bit better in biosecurity. And I just want to say, like, you have any idea what these folks have been going through, you know, in 2014, 2015, and then a lot of, to your point, economic investment has been made to improve things. And then just the time and energy it simply takes to manage these farms now with the biosecurity expectation is a big hidden cost just to do chores, right? When you're either, you know, changing boots, changing coveralls, you know, washing hands, like whatever the flavor is for that farm, it just simply takes longer. So I don't, given where we're at with all those cost inputs that you just went through, and then just the scientific reality of what biosecurity can do, I just don't think we can expect producers to come up with another thing that they're somehow missing that would significantly reduce the risk from getting influenza into their flocks. I can't think of you know, a producer or a group of producers that aren't already basically executing gold level biosecurity every day, regardless of what's going on in the environment outside, because the risk just feels so large. Because we have really moved to that kind of more endemic feel to it where, okay, like we could have really like strapped things down in the spring and the fall, but that's really not the case anymore, right? Like we're working our butts off 12 months out of the year. And it's hard. It's hard. It's hard on people. It's hard on the pocketbook to get these things done.
And you're absolutely right too. I mean, we feel it from, you know, an academic standpoint too. And just like in our research trials itself, and just like, you know, from training and then like we were talking offline on the fact that, you know, universities were biosecurity nightmares because we've got, you know, we're teaching and we want to bring people in and teach and get the experience. But then that just adds a whole other level of complicated matters coming in, but then costs of PPE and then, you know, the stress of it all too, like you said, there's a lot of, you know, just weight there feeling, okay, do I do this? When do I change this out? But I need to think about this cost. And then, how long can this dry bleach stay here? Oh, it's starting to, you know, it's absorbing water. And so it's getting kind of crunchy now or like clumping up, and then you're spilling it all over the house whenever you go into it. And then just all these different things, and so, and that's just, you know, the tip of the iceberg, right? But so then thinking about going into what, I mean, who pays for it, all of these things, but, you know, from another aspect of the cost, it's also, you think about with, besides the economics and that, you know, the tax on just your mind, but in the situation of people losing these houses or losing these animals too, whenever they get hit, that's also another level that's kind of, it's something that I never really thought about until more recently in talking to people who are involved with, you know, just the caretakers of those, of the birds. And, you know, especially in like a layer operations where you have such long lived animals, birds, and then, you know, they're gone in the blink of an eye. And that's just, you know, you can get attached to those animals, right? And it's your livelihood also. So, I mean, there's, it's not just, you know, raising birds or producing eggs. I mean, there's a lot to it. And so that's one of those kind of things that people don't often think about on one of the weights.
Yeah. And I think we're maybe getting slightly better about talking about just mental health in rural communities in general, really trying to break down the stigma of what it means and how it's okay, and the resources that folks need. But I will tell you, both from a veterinarian who had to depopulate flocks, as well as having testified in a couple different spaces with growers that have lost flocks, like it's like a double whammy, right? You have this significant sense of failure because you failed to keep these animals safe. Yeah. And then you have to turn around and kill them because of that failure. Right. Yeah. And so, yeah, I'm getting goosebumps now. Right. And that was 11 years ago for me. And it's really hard to put into words how emotionally intense that is for folks, and definitely trying to put some kind of dollar amount to that is tremendously difficult. One, to get people to talk about it, right? And two, like, how do you even put a cost impact to that to balance out kind of this idea of the only cost dictating the conversation around vaccine is the loss of exports. And I just really think with how the behavior of the virus has changed, how we're seeing it endemic in these wild bird populations, increasing different types of mammals being impacted, whether we're talking dairy cattle or people or barn cats or house cats. It's not a conversation that should be dictated by poultry anymore. It really needs to broaden out from like what stakeholders belong at the table now, because the conversation has changed in the last 10 years. And it's not only about protecting poultry flocks. It's about protecting all the stakeholders around the table.
Well, Michelle, I really appreciate your time today. We're going long and we haven't even really talked about vaccination that much. But I think we've had a great conversation, and I want to maybe we close it off for today and then we just start over and have a part two to be able to dive into that a little bit deeper, if that's okay with you.
Sounds like a plan.
All right. Well, thank you all for joining us today. And thank you, Michelle, for being here. And that concludes another episode of the Poultry Nutrition Black Belt Podcast. And we'll catch you on part two.
Thanks, Kelly.
Bye.